For what's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Europeans are grappling with a major migration crisis. As Europeans cope with the biggest migration crisis since the Second World War, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel was booed as she visited the city of Heidenau near the Czech border, scene of anti-immigrant protests. Ms. Merkel says treating with humanity and dignity those who come to us is part of our basic understanding. It is what symbolizes Germany. The chancellor referred to recent protests as shameful and disgusting. Dozens of police were hurt when protesters hurled bottles and fireworks at officers trying to prevent asylum seekers from seeking shelter over the weekend. Meanwhile, thousands of migrants fleeing war, persecution, and poverty in the Middle East and Afghanistan surged across the Serbian border into Hungary. Greece and Italy have urged other European Union member states to do more to share the migration burden. Rescuers on the Mediterranean Wednesday saved thousands of migrants coming from Africa, but at least 55 perished in the perilous journey. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir Wednesday signed a peace agreement meant to end nearly 20 months of fighting between government and rebel forces. Mr. Kiir has expressed reservations over power sharing, demilitarizing Juba, and the use of foreign peace monitors. Among the heads of state at the ceremony Wednesday was Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta.
I will appeal to you to set aside those reservations. To look at the greater picture, to look at the people that you lead, to look at the need for peace, to look at the need for unity.
The United States has welcomed the deal as a first step toward ending the conflict, but Washington cautioned it would take hard work to fully implement. The conflict has killed thousands and driven millions from their homes since December 2013. This is VOA News. The UN envoy to Libya said Wednesday he remains confident the past 7 months of talks between representatives of the North African country's rival governments will yield an agreement and ending years of chaos in the wake of the ouster of longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi. However, Bernardino Leon told the Security Council Wednesday the security situation remains mixed and the humanitarian crisis is dire.
The scale of human suffering is staggering for a country with large oil reserves and strong economic potential. According to different United Nations agencies, an estimated 1.9 million people require urgent humanitarian assistance to meet their basic health care needs. Access to food is now a major problem for some 1.2 million people, mostly in Benghazi and the East.
Leon says a final round of talks on forming a national unity government is expected to get underway this week. Members of the internationally recognized government in the East signed a peace deal last month, but Tripoli did not. Asian stocks extended gains Thursday following a strong rebound in U.S. stocks Wednesday, pushing the benchmark Dow Jones Index up more than 600 points, due in part to a hint from a member of the U.S. Central Bank's Monetary Policy Board that recent market volatility makes an interest rate hike in the U.S. more unlikely. Despite concerns over China's economy, even Chinese markets were higher after severe losses sustained this week. The surge could be tempered by more Chinese factory and service sector economic data due out next week. Ukraine and pro-Russian separatists have agreed to a ceasefire beginning September 1st, the day that the new school year is to begin. The Trilateral Contact Group, which is seeking to end the conflict that has killed more than 6,400, includes representatives of Ukraine, Russia, and Russian-backed separatists. The two sides agreed in February to a ceasefire between their forces in eastern Ukraine, but sporadic clashes continue. UN peacekeepers warned Wednesday they'll have to cut rations for nearly 7,000 former rebels and their families in the Democratic Republic of Congo, blaming a shortage of funds. The cost is estimated to be some $2 million a month. The peacekeeping mission MONUSCO's head, Martin Kobler, urged the DRC government in Kinshasa to take responsibility for the care of the rebels, many of them Congolese, but also elements of the Hutu-dominated Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda. A member of Colombia's FARC rebels pleaded guilty in Washington Wednesday to seizing three Americans and holding them captive for more than 5 years. Diego Afonso Navarrete Beltran faces life in prison when he's to be sentenced in federal court in November. Two other FARC members already have been convicted. The Americans abducted when their small plane crashed near Florencia, Colombia in February 2003. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's president signs a long-awaited peace deal, but with reservations.
A lasting peace only comes as a result of just and well-balanced and equitably managed peacemaking process. Above all, it comes as a result of real compromise, but it seems that this is not the case today.
That's South Sudan President Salva Kiir. Rebel leader Riek Machar welcomed Wednesday's signing and said it's time for both Kiir and him to transparently implement the agreement. East African leaders and the international community also hailed the signing. The first AGOA forum since Congress renewed the Trade Act gets underway this week in Libreville, Gabon.
We are working with those countries through our trade hubs and through consultations with American companies and trade ministers to try to increase the productivity of companies that are exporting to the United States to increase the quality.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. A call for Guinea-Bissau's president to revoke the appointment of his new prime minister. And Nigerians react to their government's decision to stop sponsoring pilgrimages. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has signed the long-awaited peace deal that is expected to end the country's 20-month-long civil war. Former Vice President Riek Machar and rebel leader signed the agreement 2 weeks ago in Addis Ababa. President Kiir told African leaders who gathered in Juba yesterday to witness the signing that he still has serious reservations about certain aspects of the deal.
A lasting peace only comes as a result of just and well-balanced and equitably managed peacemaking process. Above all, it comes as a result of real compromise, negotiated and consensus reached peace deal. It seems that this is not the case today, but let me reiterate you all, particularly the leaders of our region, that the leadership of our country is very much concerned about some issues which came in the proposed agreement, which are in a great deal detrimental to the so-desired peace agreement. If such peace deal is carelessly handled and managed, as it is in the case of today, the consequence will not only affect us in the South Sudan and the government, but in the greater scale, the region will be affected. Therefore, our deep and indeed serious reservations on the manner in which this round of talks and the process thereof was being managed.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who also witnessed the signing, said it is time to stop the fighting and return power to the people of South Sudan, who will then decide who their leader should be.
You are fighting for the sovereignty of the people of South Sudan, the people of South Sudan to make their own decisions. That cannot be realized in war. When you have war, it is not the people who make decisions. It is the gunmen who make decisions, who are not necessarily mandated by the people. Therefore, you need to get out of this trap, remove the guns, give back power to the people so that the people can vote for what they like.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said even though the agreement is not perfect, the people of South Sudan deserve peace.
I know it has been very difficult as we sit and work and everybody trying to find the perfect agreement. There is nothing like perfection that can be found in a time of conflict. We must all accept that we need to give and take. And the most important aspect is for us to realize and to understand that if we have an agreement, even if we are not totally happy with it, so long as it brings peace, whatever areas of disagreement, rather than being resolved on the battlefield, those areas where you do not totally all agree, it is better for us to find solution around a negotiation table, and a negotiation table led by the people and the leaders of South Sudan and not by others.
That's Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking Wednesday in South Sudan's capital, Juba. U.S. President Barack Obama welcomed President Salva Kiir's signing of South Sudan's peace agreement. But Mr. Obama said the United States and international community do not recognize any reservations or addendums to the deal. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also welcomed the signing. In a statement, Mr. Ban said the signing is a critical and necessary step towards ending the 20-month-long conflict that has devastated South Sudan and subjected its people to unspeakable suffering. Meanwhile, former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar is calling on the South Sudanese people to work towards implementing the peace deal. Machar said he is aware that the implementation of the agreement calls for both parties to work in a transparent manner.
He should have signed the peace agreement on 17th of August, so he's 9 days late. What I want to tell South Sudanese is that they should take this matter seriously. Finally now, the peace agreement is signed by the two warring parties, despite that delay. So I congratulate all South Sudanese. Now, we look forward to the implementation of the peace agreement.
Talking about the implementation of the peace agreement, when President Kiir was addressing the dignitaries at the Freedom Hall in Juba, he said, and I quote, he signed the agreement because it was forced down his throat. Was this agreement forced down your throat also?
It's an imposed agreement. Each party has their own reservations. I had made 20 points of reservations on the peace agreement. But when I compared the reservations on the agreement towards what we can get if we sign it, we would get definitely peace for people of South Sudan, even if we lose points. The agreement to us is not our minimum. It is less than our minimum, but we think we can live with it.
You have reservations and you opted to sign it. Is it not burying the problems? You are postponing the problems, which might erupt again.
I think some of the reservations that we raised, and I believe that were raised also by President Salva Kiir, because we came to know about them, those could be discussed later on. And I think we could live with them. Peace is more important for people of South Sudan now that we are going to a new system, which is a federal system, and we are going for reforms in governance, in the security, in the judiciary, and also the root causes of the conflict have been addressed, and impunity will be stamped out. The transitional justice section is very important for those who were affected. So I think we should go for peace rather than continuing the war.
The people who are affected at this hour are interested in knowing when is fighting going to stop.
Well, according to the agreement, it should stop after 72 hours. And the cessation of hostilities should come into effect within 72 hours. Although we see the government is on the offensive, fighting our troops.
That was former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar. He was speaking from Addis Ababa with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 27th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to our listeners on Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, and Brela FM in Nigeria. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. A spokesperson for Guinea-Bissau's PAIGC ruling party is calling on President José María Vaz to revoke his decision to dismiss Prime Minister Domingos Pereira. The relationship between Vaz and Pereira has been strained since last June when civilian rule was restored in Guinea-Bissau following a coup in 2012. President Vaz reportedly sacked Prime Minister Domingos over disagreement on who should be the new army chief. But PAIGC spokesperson Joao Vieira tells Ricky Schreier that the appointment of a new prime minister is illegal and President Vaz should rescind it.
The resolution that came out of our political bureau was to depose Mr. Ja because we think that Mr. Ja was nominated illegally, unconstitutionally. So we do not agree with that nomination. So that's it. Because of the law is the law, and everybody has to respect the law. Even if you are the president, you have to respect the law.
Is the president wanting more power within the government? I know Pereira, he was naming the ministers. Is there a chance that this can be reconciled, that if Vash gets more control over ministerial appointments, Pereira could come back? Because I know PGC said they wanted Pereira to be the prime minister.
Yes, you know, actually, we have to rewind a little bit, because PAGC is the party which won the election, and we respect that. The president dismissed the government led by Mr. Pereira just because he thinks that he has a personal disagreement with Mr. Pereira. So something subjective is not objective. He did not give us any objective reason why he has dismissed the government. We, according to the IMF, this is one of the best governments ever in Guinea-Bissau.
Vasha said the fallout with Pereira came from Pereira's appointment of a new armed forces chief. Is that armed forces chief now gone? And why was he not okay with the armed forces chief that Pereira appointed?
No, that does not make sense, what the president is arguing. It does not make sense at all. Well, I think that question you should ask is asking Mr. President why he is raising that question, because we never said that that was a point of discussion. So we actually do not understand why he's making that question.
So you think maybe that he's saying that, but that's not actually the reason behind the dissolving
of
the government?
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. That was not the reason behind. Well, we assume that the reason behind it, which does not make sense, is that the president might have something personal against the prime minister, against the president of the ICC. And you just have to tell the people the truth.
Is there a political way or route that the PGC can use to impeach Vaj? I mean, to...
We do not have a system like in the United States where you can, you know, like impeachment.
Is there concern with Bissau's history of instability that this will get worse before it gets better?
The best solution to all of this is that the president, he has to revoke the decree. If you can gather proof that the president, during his mandate, he has conducted himself in a way there's not conditions, to promote peace and stability. He committed some type of crimes. If he can prove that legally, the Supreme Court could definitely kind of impeach him.
That was Joao Vieira, spokesperson for Guinea-Bissau's ruling PAIGC party. He was speaking with Ricky Stryak from the capital, Bissau. The United States and African nations are this week holding the first conference in Gabon on the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, since Congress recently renewed the zero-tariff deal for another 10 years. Maria Mandialo reports on how African nations can better exploit preferential access when most analysts say AGOA has been underutilized.
Exhibitors at the AGOA Forum in the Gabonese capital, Libreville, are ready to take full advantage of exporting their products into the U.S. tax-free. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield is attending the forum and says more countries can benefit from AGOA.
We are working with those countries through our trade hubs and through consultations with American companies and trade ministers to try to increase the productivity of companies that are exporting to the United States, to increase the quality.
She says it's a long-term process and won't happen overnight. While this is an exciting time for the Gabonese leadership, the average person in Libreville doesn't know what AGOA is.
Personnellement, AGOA, c'est la première fois que j'entends parler.
Personally, this is the first time I am hearing about AGOA.
Another resident says he hopes young entrepreneurs like him can get help.
It's always been difficult because banks around here do not give us loans or help us in any way. They don't take chances on us, so hope AGOA can help us with a solution.
Few African economies have taken advantage of the U.S. trade initiative. The Durban Chamber of Commerce chief executive says the trade partnership has helped advance South Africa's manufacturing sector.
South Africa has been able to grow the export of, besides the citrus, which are agricultural goods, we've been able to export an enormous amount of vehicles, parts, into the U.S. market.
But Whitney Schneiderman, a non-resident fellow at the Brookings Institutions, told VOA via Skype that there have been some disparities.
South Africa exports about $4 billion worth of products to the U.S. under AGOA. And I don't think there's another country that even reaches $1 billion. So I think it's really a challenge for the U.S. and for all AGOA beneficiaries to figure out how to take better advantage of the legislation.
But while economies of countries like South Africa have grown, other African leaders have said their countries lack the skilled labor and infrastructure to take advantage of AGOA. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Nigeria's government has announced that it will stop paying for religious pilgrimages abroad. While some have lauded the move as a cost-saving measure, others say the pilgrimages are an important part of public life. Christine reports with Ibrahima Yakubu in Kaduna.
Every year, thousands of Nigerians travel overseas on religious pilgrimages. Muslims head to Mecca, while Christians go to Jerusalem. Under previous administrations, Nigeria's federal governments paid for these pilgrimages. But the new administration of Muhammadu Buhari says it will not be doing that anymore, nor will the government of Kaduna State in the country's north. Samuel Aruan is a state government spokesman.
From now on, there will be nothing like sponsoring key government officials or even the general public to either go to Jerusalem or to go to Mecca.
The pilgrims are not being entirely cut off. Federal government spokesman Femi Adesina says pilgrims will be allowed by foreign currency at a preferential exchange rate. Aruan says Kaduna will send people to help pilgrims with safety and logistics. Still, the move has rattled some in Nigeria, where prayer and displays of devotion are important parts of public life. Yohana Buru is the general overseer of a church in the city of Kaduna.
It is the duty of the government at least to give that support to those who really, what that mean, a necessity to them. Because that will increase their faith, that will also help them to pray for this nation, that will help them to pray for the unity of this country, and for the success of every government that comes on.
But others, like Kaduna resident Zayad Aliyu, say they never benefited from the money allocated for these pilgrimages. He says the government should spend its money elsewhere.
All this type of extra spending is not going for the masses, it's going for the wealthy.
Nigeria is Africa's most populous country, with its population of about 173 million, about equally divided between Muslims and Christians. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The head of the U.S. State Department's Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, Paul Swider, is in Zimbabwe visiting several cities and towns where enrollment for the 2016 program is taking place. Sebastian Mofu joined him in Masvingo, about 300 kilometers south of Harare, and has this report.
At this packed city hall in Masvingo, young Zimbabweans lined up with questions for the U.S. official. They hope to be selected for the next year's six-week program in the United States. The head of the Young African Leaders Initiative, Paul Swider, explained to potential candidates what the program is about.
We see you as the future leaders of the continent, and we want to make friends, share information, connect with you so that when you do assume those roles as leaders in business and social endeavors and so forth, we already know who you are. We're already friends. Within the network, there are a few investors, there are a few funders, there are a few other people who just want to connect because it's a network and that's what it's there for.
Established by U.S. President Barack Obama, YALI's flagship program is the Mandela Washington Fellowship. So far, 1,000 young Africans have taken part in the program. Samantha Nyeremuka, a disability activist, is one of the 60 Zimbabweans who have benefited from the fellowship.
In terms of disability issues, we tend to focus more on policy issues in Zimbabwe than the actual work. And with that, it gave me a different perspective of what we do here in Zimbabwe that I hope to change or to improve in terms of sign language issues. Because when you look at sign language in Zimbabwe, it's one of those languages that's really not considered much. And people who are deaf tend to be not given a chance to express themselves because not many people know sign language. But with what I learned, I hope to put a change to that.
Swider said any Africans like Samantha who want to make a difference in their communities are eligible to apply regardless of geographic location, gender, or disability. He said President Obama and the U.S. want young Africans to, quote, step up to the plate, unquote, and join the most robust network on the continent. Sebastian Mhofu for VOA News, Mashingo, Zimbabwe.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Awuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Kenyan Julius Yego won men's javelin in a new Africa record and world-leading performance of 92.72 meters on Wednesday. Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed was second with a throw of 88.99 meters. El Sayed hands Egypt their first medal ever since the World Athletics Championships started in Helsinki, Finland in 1983. On the track, South African Wade van Niekerk triumphed in men's 400 meters in 43.48 seconds, while Botswana's Isaac Makwala was fifth in 44.63 seconds. Wade van Niekerk set a new Africa record. He has run the world's quickest time this year and is the fourth fastest 400-meter runner of all time behind Americans Michael Johnson, Harry Butch Reynolds, and Jeremy Warner. Meanwhile, Kenya's All-Africa Games champion Hyvin Kiyeng Jepkemoi prevailed in women's 3,000-meter steeplechase in 9 minutes and 19.11 seconds. Tunisian Habiba Gribi clinched her second silver medal. She was also a silver medalist at the World Championships in 2011 in Daegu, South Korea. South African Wenda Nell was seventh in women's 400-meter hurdles. Staying in Beijing, Kenya increased their tally to 6 gold, 3 silver, and 2 bronze medals to enhance their lead at the World Championship medal table. Ethiopia is seventh with 1 gold and 2 silvers. Eritrea and South Africa share 10th spot with a gold medal each. Egypt and Tunisia tie in 17th place with a silver medal apiece, while Uganda is 25th with 1 bronze medals. They are 33 nations on the medal table. Still in Beijing, South African Anaso Jobodwana competes in men's 200 meters today, Thursday. On the infield, Nigerian Tosin Oke and South African Godfrey Kotsumokwena tackle men's triple jump. Turning to basketball, Senegal outplayed Uganda 79-48, Algeria pipped Cameroon 73-71, Gabon outwitted Cape Verde Islands 77-67, and Nigeria dismissed Mozambique 83-47 at the Africa Men's Basketball Championships in the Tunisian capital, Tunis. Today, Thursday, in quarterfinal action, Tunisia engage Mali, Egypt challenge defending champions Angola, Senegal face Algeria, and Gabon encounter Uganda, while Zimbabwe and Uganda face off in a classification tie. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has signed a peace deal aimed at ending nearly 20 months of fighting between government forces and rebels led by his former deputy. Kiir expressed reservations while signing the agreement Wednesday during a ceremony in the capital, Juba. U.S. President Barack Obama welcomed President Salva Kiir's signing of the deal, but Mr. Obama said the United States and international community do not recognize any reservations or addendums to the deal. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also welcomed the signing. In a statement, Mr. Ban said the signing is a critical and necessary step towards ending the 20-month-long conflict that has devastated South Sudan and subjected its people to unspeakable suffering. And that's it for this Thursday, August 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Botti saying, have a good day, Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA. On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.